So we talked earlier with our DFL correspondent, Colleen Nardone, about the turmoil inside DFL politics in northern Minnesota. We're going to continue our making sausage conversations right now. We're going to focus in on the national significance of the District 8 race in Minnesota, as well as the race between Senator Tina Smith and Richard Painter. We've got MinnPost Washington correspondent Sam Brody joining us now. Sam, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So your headline on MinnPost yesterday was from anti-Trump to pro-copper nickel mining. The 8th District DFL primary covers a lot of ground. And so you're writing about that this race is one of the most watched. It's most expensive. Usually at this point, we've got an endorsed candidate, but the DFL convention did not endorse anyone. And it's really become a very complicated and tough race to the primary. So why is it most watched? Why are people nationally watching this, and why so much money coming in here, Sam?
Yeah, so the 8th has been basically since 2012 consistently one of the most expensive and closest U.S. House races in the country. Probably a lot of your listeners know that for a long time this was pretty solid DFL territory. Jim Oberstar, DFL congressman, represented the district for decades, but kind of growth in the suburbs, in the southern end of the district of the Twin Cities, has made the district a little more conservative. So now, really, it's kind of a toss-up. Rick Nolan, the incumbent, has won the last couple races, you know, really just by a couple thousand votes. So, and in 2016, the district went for Nolan, but it also preferred Donald Trump by about 15 points. So a reason it's really in the spotlight this cycle is, you know, Republicans are facing an election year where there's talk of a blue wave, and Democrats eyeing lots and lots of districts that are open seats or held by Republicans that they believe they can take back in hopes of reclaiming the majority in the House. The 8th is probably one of those districts where Republicans feel like they've got a shot at flipping it from blue to red. It's not a stretch to say that it's really one of the few bright spots on the map for them when it comes to flipping a district. So they want to go all in to show that they are, you know, capable of flipping some of these seats. They'd love to take back, you know, this district that has been a DFL stronghold for so much time. And as a sign of their investment, President Donald Trump himself, as you all know, came to Duluth to rally on behalf of Pete Stauber, who is the Republican candidate.
Yeah, I think Vice President Pence is coming next week as well, or sometime before the primary, as well to stump and raise money for Pete Stauber. And so the Republicans on the other side, they're very united behind one guy. And here's this DFL, a complicated DFL race. Let's talk about some of those candidates, maybe starting with Jason Metza. What does he have going for him in terms of winning the DFL primary?
Yeah, so Jason Metza is he's been a state representative down in St. Paul for a few terms. He represents a House district centered on the Iron Range. He's from the town of Virginia. And, you know, Metza is probably out of the candidates the most in favor of mining in the area. He has shown the least kind of resistance and skepticism towards copper nickel mining projects like Polymet and White Lakes, the proposed project there. But he's not making a whole lot of noise about that stance, at least so far. We may see more of it in the coming weeks, but he's really kind of focused on a populist message, $15 an hour minimum wage, Medicare for all, single payer kind of thing, which I should note all of the candidates in the DFL primary are in favor of. For him to, you know, he has got a strong geographic base, and kind of the Iron Range DFL establishment has really lined up behind him.
And he's young.
He is young, and a lot of the candidates, you know, that kind of brings us to Joe Radinovich, who's another candidate in the race, also another, you know, kind of seasoned political guy, also in his 30s, who's a former state representative who represented a district over in the Brainerd Lakes region. He's from the same town as Congressman Nolan. And he's sort of kind of trying to straddle a middle line on mining issues, but also like Metza, emphasizing Medicare for all and sort of a populist, you know, progressive political message.
You know, Radinovich worked for Congressman Nolan, and both on his campaign and I think in his office after he was elected. And will Nolan's close association with Radinovich help him much?
Well, it's a complicated question. So Radinovich managed Nolan's campaign in 2016. He never worked for his office. You know, one of the kind of questions here in the DFL primary is, you know, what impact some of these races at the top of the ballot are going to have on who shows up and which candidates benefit from that. There's an open seat governor's race, obviously, that's really, you know, the most talked about race in Minnesota. Congressman Nolan is on that ballot. He's the running mate of Attorney General Lori Swanson, who's running for governor. So certainly, you know, Radinovich is playing up his association with Congressman Nolan in advertisements and in mailers. He's noting that he managed Nolan's 2016 campaign. So another thing worth noting, though, is that at the DFL convention in April in Duluth, as voting went on, Congressman Nolan endorsed Joe Radinovich. He failed to kind of get the requisite support to get the endorsement. There was no endorsement. And then Congressman Nolan rescinded his endorsement of Joe Radinovich, saying that he would support somebody after the primary.
Okay.
We're talking to Sam Brody. He's the Washington correspondent for MinnPost. We're talking about the District 8 race in northern Minnesota. So let's move on to Michelle Lee. A lot of people know who she is, and we know this now, that celebrity can have a lot to do with how people vote, and people are used to her being in their homes for the nightly news. What's your thoughts on Michelle Lee?
Yeah, you know, she's running kind of an interesting campaign in that she really has an advantage that money cannot buy, which is, as you point out, name recognition. Both Radinovich and Metsa have led the race in terms of fundraising and will have the resources needed to go on TV with advertisements and mailers. Lee has really not raised much money, but a lot of people know who she is and are very, very familiar with her. And in a five-way primary, that familiarity could be something that ends up pushing her over the edge. She's the only candidate who's really based near Duluth. A lot of Duluth voters will have familiarity with her, and this is kind of the most voter-rich area of the district. Also worth pointing out that her stance against copper-nickel mining is pretty unambiguous. When she entered the primary race, that was kind of the position she most strongly emphasized. So she's in a position really to lock up the lion's share of the pro-environmental sort of anti-copper nickel mining vote in the primary electorate. And that could be a pretty big benefit for her.
And a fourth candidate, and the only candidate really from the southern part of the district, is North Branch Mayor Kirsten Kennedy. And how's her race been going? How's her campaign?
Yeah, I mean, she's I've talked to folks who know the race who like her a lot and think she's a strong candidate. You know, she's a single mom, five kids, mayor of a town in a very in North Branch, which is that southern end of the district is you know, much more strongly conservative than other parts of the district, as a DFL mayor. But she's really struggled to raise money. Of course, fundraising isn't everything, but unlike Lee, she doesn't have that kind of name familiarity that could be a benefit. So, you know, who knows? This is a contested primary. Really, anything could happen. But most of the folks I speak with who are familiar with the race don't think that Kennedy has a real shot of cracking the top spot here.
What about Soren Sorensen? He's out of Bemidji. He's the fifth in the DFL primary for District 8. What do you know about him?
So he joined the race after the convention. He didn't compete for the endorsement there. He was in attendance blogging it, but he decided to jump into the race and hasn't raised too much money, but he says he's been out there door knocking and trying to connect with voters in that western part of the district. Again, most of the folks I speak with don't believe he's got a real shot of cracking the kind of top tier of the race.
So, Sam, as a journalist, how do you put together a story like this? Who are you talking to? Where are you getting your information from?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I try to speak to people associated with the campaigns. Obviously, I speak with the candidates themselves. That's the best way to cover a story like this, to hear from them, you know, what they're doing in their own words, what they emphasize. That often leads the story in a particular direction. For example, in talking to the candidates themselves, you know, they really describe for me their how they view their campaign strategy and how they plan to reach voters and how they plan to persuade them. And that really kind of got my story to where it was, which was exploring how each of these candidates have a very distinct campaign strategy and, you know, hoping that that's going to be the one that carries them over. But I also talk to people, you know, who have knowledge of this district, political operatives who don't work for a particular campaign, who hear things. And I talk to folks like Aaron Brown, who runs a political blog and sort of cultural blog for the Iron Range and knows a lot about campaigns. So it's just a mix of all those things.
Well, Sam, let's move to another contest within the DFL party for this upcoming primary, and that would be the Senate seat currently occupied by Tina Smith, who was appointed by Governor Dayton after Al Franken resigned. And seems like her main rival is a fellow named Richard Painter, who's never been in Democratic politics. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so this is really shaped up into a pretty fascinating primary fight within the DFL. Senator Smith took over at the beginning of the year when Al Franken resigned, was appointed by Governor Dayton. Smith was the lieutenant governor. And pretty much the entire party establishment quickly lined up behind Smith, from members of Congress to other elected officials, began to back her. But Painter emerged with kind of an unexpectedly strong primary challenge. Painter was a lawyer in the George W. Bush White House during that administration and moved to Minnesota to become a professor of law at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. And kind of since Trump got elected, has emerged as this very vocally anti-Trump figure, is frequently on cable news and on Twitter talking about the need to impeach Trump, the Russia investigation, allegations of corruption and things like that. So kind of gave him, has a bit of a national profile, and he entered the race as a Democrat. He had really never identified as a Democrat before, was a lifelong Republican, but said that the Republican Party was no longer recognizable, so he had to run as a Democrat. And in this race, he's really been emphasizing two things. One of them is Trump and the need to impeach him, and he argues that Tina Smith is not strong enough on that. And the other thing is copper nickel mining. He's really honed in on that as sort of the wedge issue in the DFL right now. And he's saying that Tina Smith is too moderate on it. He's vehemently against copper nickel mining, and he's promising people that he will be the pro-environment candidate that will stand up to projects like PolyMet. So he's really picked up more support than I think a lot of people thought. He did not win the endorsement at the state convention, but he picked up about 15% of the vote, and he and the Smith campaign and the DFL are really engaged in sort of a boxing match here, you know, trading barbs, and things are getting a little nasty with a couple weeks to go until the primary.
My guess is DFL and party people aren't too excited about Painter challenging Smith, but does Painter have any, you know, you mentioned earlier that a lot of Democratic candidates this time around are really pushing hard for some form of universal health care, universal health insurance. Does Painter made any statements about that issue?
Yeah, Painter is in favor of Medicare for all, single payer. I mean, you know, one of the interesting things here is this is a guy who, you know, who is a lifelong Republican and you know, the DFL establishment here, particularly the party. Smith has kind of pursued a strategy of personally kind of ignoring Painter, seeming to leave that kind of spade work here to the DFL in terms of really hitting on Painter. But, you know, they've made a big noise about, you know, his past links to the Republican Party and his kind of refusal to identify as a Democrat. But Painter's really embraced some of these kind of populist positions that define the Democratic Party right now. It's allowed him to really kind of pick up some steam. Now, whether voters ultimately trust Painter, a guy who, you know, served with George W. Bush, a man who, you know, is probably not extremely popular among the DFL primary electorate, that remains to be seen. But he's certainly talking the talk that you would expect from a real populist DFL candidate.
You can read more about Minnesota politics at member-supported MinPost.com. We've been talking with their Washington correspondent, Sam Brody. Thanks, Sam. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Yep. Thank you both.
You're welcome. You can also find a conversation from last week with the Republican in the race for the Senate seat. That's Karen Housley.
Yeah.
You can find that at KAXE.org. And don't forget, we are very excited for the 2018 Greater Minnesota Governors Forum. It's Tuesday, August 21st, 1 week after the primary. And it is a strictly Greater Minnesota conversation with people who live here asking the questions. That includes me, Aaron Brown, and Chuck Marone, and our moderator, Dennis Wyman of Lakeland Public TV. You'll hear it live on KEXE and some other stations, other Amper stations around the state, as well as public television stations and ICTV. So it's going to be a great event. Free tickets, rifecenter.org.